Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the band of traders. I'm your host, Kyle, and today I've got Bear Goes Long and Andrew joining in for a conversation all about greed. But before we dive in, let's go ahead and plug, promote anything you guys want to share with us and feed some of that other greed for consumerism. Bear, you got anything you want to promote, plug, share?
Well, you know, after listening to the last episode, you know, I gotta push, you know, Cleo's Twitter account.
You can call it what it is.
I mean, it was part of the original conversation.
Clitterwatch 2024. That's what we're calling it. H of Trading. Like, yeah, please give her a follow. We got some bold predictions on whether or not she's going to surpass all of us by the end of the year. And it needs your guys' help because it's not going so well yet. Andrew, you got anything you want to point people towards or got anything cool going on?
Oh, man. Go outside. Have some fun. It's summer, you know? Take this podcast on a walk.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Are you telling me that? Or
no? Yeah, just... Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. My walks are more productive, actually, when I it's nothing but, you know, me. No music, no podcast, no nothing.
Believe it or not, I tried to feed a gopher today, like right before we started recording. I went outside and there's this gopher that's been running around in our backyard for the last, like, I don't know, probably 3 months.
Yeah,
and I finally got a close look at the thing. The thing doesn't run away. It's not scared of people. And I finally figured out why. It's because it had most of its face tore off. Like, it's missing eyes.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think it can see anything. So, like, yeah. So I think you've earned a banana, dude.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's my new disabled friend. If anybody else out there listening has any suggestions, corrections, or questions for future guests, you can send them over to us via email at bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com. Join our free Discord server where we partner up with Vanta. Or you can even DM us on Clitter at financialinept1. Bear, you're at Bear Goes Long. And Andrew, I think you are Long Winter Trading Co.
Yep, that's correct.
We'll have all those links in the episode description. You guys can check them out whenever you're ready. But let's just kind of dive in on today's conversation, I think. So let me get my journal entry pulled up, because this is all kind of stemming from, like, the moment I had. This was, like, right before 4th of July. I was in a trade. I was making notes on my charts. I was reflecting on some stuff that I had seen. When I went back and was looking at it, I noticed that I made multiple notes about not liking my thesis anymore based on some price action I was seeing, but I didn't actually close anything out. I'd gotten so used to the emotional side being the one telling me when I should flatten a trade that I've started to just ignore it. But it actually occurred to me that, like, that day type was not the type to be, like, shooting for stretch targets, like aiming for the moon and beyond, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got kind of, I think I identified that it's actually greed was the one that was, like, dictating those trading decisions. And it was doing it in a way that was very fascinating to me because it was tricking me into thinking that the rational side of me was the emotional one and that the greed one was the one who was being rational.
Oh, that's wild.
Right?
Okay.
So have you ever dealt with any of that, like, in your parts work where you got, like, a trickster almost?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I definitely want to hear more about it because I think there's some nuance that's really interesting. So, you know, my first thing, I think we're all probably familiar with this is like a clear read on price, right? Is both technical and emotional. And like we can use a ton of our like intuitive people reading skills. And this is kind of what I think you're talking about and kind of where you probably blurred the lines in an unhelpful way. Is we use intuition to get a sense of people's positioning, who's advantaged, who's disadvantaged, how we might operate inside of that. However, there's kind of that, like you said, some sort of like want or greed, emotion, like FOMO, emotional mechanism that often is extremely strong and like overrides our read.
Yeah.
Right. And so then instead of responding to like conversational intuition, like we do in this, you know, in these and then in good trading, we're overlaying our desire, right? Yes. Like what we would like the market to do on top of the market. And we're kind of, I think the mind is funny because I think we don't have an ability to see the difference a lot of times between like projected desire and intuition. So what I kind of say to a lot of people is like, it's an impulsive trade when you lose and it's an intuitive trade when you win.
Yes.
But it's the same trade. You know what I mean? Right, it's the same like out of process trade. But we do that to ourselves constantly. I think we constantly are lying to ourselves in that way where, you know, yeah, I just got in and my instincts were just so good. And it was just an impulse trade. Like it was an impulsive emotional trade, but it happened to be right. And vice versa. We do the same thing, but we beat ourselves up when it's an impulsive trade that we lose, you know?
Yeah.
And so in that kind of moment, so what was happening in price? Like what, cause I know for me what my triggers are. What was happening in price that sort of triggered for you, like the desire to, you know, expect certain things versus what was actually happening?
As far as like talking about like the moment when I was ready to abandon it, or are you talking about like the overall getting into it?
Yeah, like was a lot of times I see this with people when there's like a bullish pattern off the open, right? Or there's like a big move that they weren't quite ready for yet. And it usually like aligns with what we were already thinking, you know? So like, was there a pattern or like, was there some sort of trigger that pushed you into like
getting scared of the trade? Yes. Yes. There definitely was some things that I saw. And if you click on the link that I sent to our group chat there, you can see the chart and the journal entry itself. So I can kind of talk through what you guys are looking at. And I'll put a link in this in the episode notes so people can see that too. So there is like that swing right down there at like 79. I think they had another swing at like 70. The way that price interacted as it like penetrated those and then like immediately recovered, like that was like the first scare for me. And then when it didn't hold the flag around like the 80s, like that was number two. And then from that point, I think it was just, you see where I did the, I'm not my account. This is not my hand moment where I was trying to convince myself it's okay to stay in the trade. But at this point, like I'd seen enough, like just looking at the price action on here to be able to say, I probably should have just cut this. But, I was so married to the idea of it going further down that I think what it really drove down to was I was afraid of that moment where you hit your last target on your last piece of what you have in your positioning, and then it goes like another 100 points.
Totally. Yeah.
Like that was the moment I think that greed was trying to protect me from. It was, this thing's going and it's going to keep going. And even when evidence was flying contrary to that, I was unable to accept it.
Okay.
But there was more that was going on to this too. There was a voice that I was hearing that was saying things like, close it out now, you still get $50 or whatever the point value was at the time. Close it out now, you still get this much. Close it out now, you still get X. Or try to get it. Maybe it'll come back down here. You can get out right at this point. And I think that was the rational part of me, my Carl Sagan, as we've identified in previous conversations, like screaming for attention. Like, guys, somebody listen to me, please. Yeah. This thing is not doing what you expect.
Yeah, so when did you notice the basically like the emotional deviation from standard, you know? So if you have like a desired emotional position when you're in the market, at what point during the trade did you, cause you know, maybe you were acting and behaving on a certain thing, right? But when did you realize like, oh man, I'm being kind of a crazy person here right now, or like I'm getting a little bit off of my ideal? Like at what point in the trade?
Well, see, I never did anything different. All I did was just put the stop at break even,
okay,
the targets where they were, and I was just watching it, really, okay, at this point.
It was just an internal dialogue of
yes,
like,
yes.
Whoa.
It was an internal fight, an internal struggle over whether or not to close this position now when evidence was clearly showing us. And now maybe that's there was a point when I would scratch too easily.
Okay.
Or I would take profits too soon. So the mechanism of not moving stops anymore, just going to break even once you've hit a target, was more just to protect me from acting irrationally in these moments.
Okay.
But I never really like analyzed the conversations or paid attention to who the players were, who was speaking in those moments. So
yeah,
as I'm starting to build kind of more attuneness to, or I guess awareness, just like being able to recognize those conversations, those moments, those different personalities speaking up.
Yeah.
It's kind of making me rethink that whole idea, I guess.
Okay. Have you noticed it since? Have you noticed it in other instances?
Actually, I think today even, or maybe it was yesterday. It was one day where I closed out another trade that was, it was probably too late, but I did close it out and save maybe 15, 20 points on something.
Okay.
That normally would have come back to break even, and it would have come back to break even on me. So I have been better at listening to him and acting on that. But
okay,
again, this was like maybe, you know, like a week ago. So
yeah, okay, no, that's great. So one of the things that I think is really interesting there is, and you guys can kind of add into this because you've had experience with it as well. You know, every day that we show up and we execute in the markets, we have, you know, I would say kind of like an ideal that is, let's say, emotionally aware of ourselves, emotionally aware of like the other positions that are out there that exist, right? Like who's offsides, those types of things. So it's not that we're like emotionless, but we're using those emotional skills to our benefit. But then there's kind of a rigid black and white executional method, right? That's like, mm-hmm. I'm taking X setups. I take, you know, my stops look like this. My targets look like this. There's not a lot of ambiguity, or at least that's the ideal. There's kind of a mechanical ideal. And then as we enter into the market, we sort of try to find a balance between those two that actually produces profit. What I see for a lot of people is that they come in and they, let's say they have a good read some of the time and they do exceptionally well, but there's not a lot of systematic process there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have other people who come in and they have this great systematic process and, you know, but they follow this thing to a T and they don't end up profiting in any real way.
Right.
You know, and
it's the leaning too far to one side or the other when really like the best that I've traded in the past, like since we've started talking, like it's felt like the emotional and the rational side have been in harmony or working together.
Yes, that's exactly right.
The emotion side gives the urge, I would really like to get along here, but then I fall back on the notes and observations and things that I mark up on the charts to say, okay, does this make sense, this mm-hmm. feeling? And if it does, then where can I try to take advantage of that?
Yes. And that's, okay, so that's kind of the playing with fire that is discretionary, like rules-based trading, because mm-hmm. we have a method. So for me, I look at a couple tools. I basically trade one setup, two directions, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's silly how simple it is. but
that's,
yeah, but I use a ton of emotional discretion to try mm-hmm. to gauge if, let's say, the market is moving in the way that I would need it to move. Trying to read people's behavior and price, like our candles, how are they being built? Like what's the wick factor versus body factor? Like what's the likelihood that I'll take the setup and get stopped out, you know? And then have it work. Like, I want to understand those variables. And those are sort of non-algorithmic variables for me. I can't, mm-hmm. I can't quite program those in. And so, the same thing of, you know, today, for instance, we had kind of a capitulation low with no follow through. And that's a really interesting thing inside the context of the market. We're like, you know, in this crazy bullish trend that's not giving back anything. And, you know, you want to take that as a long setup, right? But, you know, two or three months ago, you'd want to take that as a continuation. You know, there's a,
right.
It's just kind of all context and kind of knowing how people are positioned, but then also knowing how the market's positioned. So we have all this ambiguity, but then when we introduce that into our actual execution metrics, exactly what you're saying, things like, I want more today, or I want a relief. Like, I feel like a loser at my job, so I want to feel successful in the market, right? That's like super common. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one of the ones that I have a lot of times is like, I haven't gotten out and gotten kind of the exercise that I need for a few days. And so I'm kind of looking for that thrill in the market. And I find right. like that throws me off real bad. And so what I end up doing is I have behavioral patterns that exist for me in that. And I just notice them. So one of the things that I'll do is I'll tighten up my stops and I'll attack more in the market. And when I notice myself doing that, I know that, I got to get outside.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? And so, you know, like this isn't working for me and I'm going to just need to remove myself from this situation. That might not be everybody's metric. That's my metric. That's just how it works. And I think kind of what you're saying, Kyle, is like you were in the market and you realized even if you didn't change your actual metric, I'm sure in the past you have, right? Mm-hmm. You've adjusted how you're trading. You were even just starting to see and understand how what you desire to do, the technical outcome, versus what you feel like doing are at odds with each other. And you're trying to decide who's right
yeah.
in that, right? Yep. Is this intuition? Is this positive intuition or is this greed? Am I feeling something that is going to help me over the long run or hurt me over the long run? And what I say, and this is what I recommend for people, is I actually kind of say, when you get that sense, so you have that crossroads happen, and because my main job is capital protection. So mm-hmm. when that happens, I say flatten the trade and just take a minute to write it down. And it's just a protocol until you understand what's happening.
Okay.
It's, you've just reached a new little frontier of kind of emotional mechanical awareness. And instead of trying to like battle it out in the moment and make the best decision, what I actually recommend for people is just shut it down for a second and document the experience. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to have what your brain is going to read a clean exit as a success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the point in that moment when you discover kind of a new piece of thinking, like a new bit of ground in your thinking. The point isn't to have a good trade. Who cares about that? We've got 10,000 more trades to do. The point is to document your internal path in a way that benefits the next 10,000 trades.
Yeah.
So I just say in that moment, I say, okay, what you've done is you're not here for P&L. You're here to understand yourself and understand how the market works and how you work in the market. So shut it down and like from a trade perspective and find success in how you map that mental process. And then you can, the next time you come to it, you have a simple and clear method for walking yourself through that and going back to alignment, if that makes sense, like alignment with your intention. And so the real gold nuggets that we get in the market isn't P&L. It's not a winning trade or a losing trade. It's understanding our own reactions and our own responses to all of the different potential outcomes that occur
right.
as we interact with the market.
Wow, that sounds powerful.
Yeah, it's pretty wild because then you show up and anything can happen,
mm-hmm.
right? But you've mentally been there with yourself before 1,000 times.
And you got notes to back it up too, to reflect on. Yeah.
You've got, exactly. Like you're so familiar with yourself. And that's, for me, that's given me an intense level of stability in the market, is just knowing how I react, how I feel. I'm not necessarily going to change those things. I'm still going to kind of be the same, but they soften and those emotional spikes really come down,
mm-hmm.
Which then reduces like tilt potential. It reduces like showing up tomorrow and, you know, having the same kind of FOMO chasing feeling or, selling low of day and getting stopped out and getting frustrated. You know what I mean? Like
right.
you're always two steps ahead of yourself and that's really the goal. And so I do that by prioritizing understanding my mental path more than a winning trade or a losing trade or whatever.
Okay. I kind of like your methodology better. My initial thought was to just spend a few moments when those feelings come in to try to just ask, you know, like, what's your argument? Okay. Present your case.
Yeah.
then the other side can present his case, and then I can make a rational decision based on the merits of both of their arguments. Mm-hmm. But that also makes me feel a bit like a crazy person.
Oh, it's going to make you crazy. It's going to be way too much ambiguity. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's that. I can say this hopefully with some confidence because I've been there exactly where you are. So there was a time where I was trying to navigate a bunch of these complicated things in real time so that I could come up with the best answer, blah, blah, blah. And when I said, that's enough, black and white, what's the black and white answer here? Mm-hmm. It's like markets are shrewd. They're a shrewd mechanism. We need to interact with them in a shrewd way, but we have to be able to work through all this nuance. Do you know what I mean? Yep. And so in order to make a good, shrewd, black and white decision, you got to get off the court, do you know, and go work that out and then come back into game time.
Yeah, go watch some tape.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Not to borrow too many platitudes, but, you know, really come back to the floor trader platitude of, you know, when in doubt, flatten out. Mm-hmm. Is kind of what that sounds like to me.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. And I think that's exactly right. It's just, but I think we're hesitant to let a good trade go. Yes. We're like, mm-hmm. What if I did everything right? And I just shut it down. Just shut it down and let's go figure out what's going on and then come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know? That's interesting because a lot of what you were talking about initially is, you know, D.D. Schultz calls it, or she's referred to it as a fear of future regret.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
That's exactly
using
what
that
is.
To drive decisions. And, okay. And that's, to me, that's really a really insightful one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
fear of future regret. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about your experiences? Because I think you had kind of a similar deal like I did last week. I think it was last Friday.
Yeah, and last week's pretty interesting. I started the week taking some very significant payouts from two of my funded accounts.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, nice work.
Yeah, I mean, that was awesome, but it also kind of lit some of those greed aspects on fire and, you know, really put me to the test. So I quickly, you know, found myself chase, and just chasing myself into the ground. Mm. Done a lot of thinking about that the last few days. And even just today, I realized that for the past, 2 months at least, I've been trading without being able to see my profits. Mm. So I can see the profit on the trade, on the individual trade, but I'm hiding my account balances, and I've even been hiding my, a lot of times even hiding my profit on the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't realize that I had changed that last week.
Hmm.
I had spun things around so that I could see the account balances. I could see that. And I was looking at them all, my account balances, cause I was looking at targets. And so now, you know, I've changed my trading. That changed my trading from, you know, I'm looking for good trades, I'm looking for good opportunities, I'm paying attention to my emotions and my intuition, to trying to turn a fast buck. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to hit this amount of money every day.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, I started realizing that this morning and, you know, my funded accounts, I went down a little bit and then I just turned it off. And it's like, no, I'm not trading well. I haven't traded well in a week. You know, I got lucky on Monday. I caught some really nice trades, but you know, Friday and Tuesday were horrible. You know, I essentially tilted, or what I call tilting now, which is interesting. Sorry, I've gotten way off track here.
No, I'm curious. Do you guys feel like looking at your longer term P&L curve has a tendency to throw you off process?
No.
No. Okay.
No, not necessarily. I think it's actually more, it's more like a stabilizer for me. Like when I start to worry about things, I can go back and look and be like, oh, well, hey, I'm still profitable over this period of time. Like, let's take some heart in that.
Yeah. I've done a few posts on that. You know, just kind of showing some of my history of, you know, when I really cranked down my daily loss limit, how positively that impacted my trading. We talked about this in the roundtable episode of, you know, I switched it around so that, you know, a bad day can only hurt me so much. Okay. Now, you know, I've had a couple of days where I turned those controls off and I, I hurt myself sufficiently. You know, I still have to touch the stove. I'm still one of those people.
Oh, I think we all do. That's A-OK. Yeah. I think that's part of the fun.
But I think the point is like when you... How long are you touching the stove for now? Are you still holding your hand on it for 6 hours, or are you touching it like back and away?
Of your body?
Yeah, are you doing it at the back of your hand?
Face to stove.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I made the remark about, you know, what I call a tilt nowadays. You know, I can go back a year ago, and a tilt day for me was like multiple resets on an eval account. And I mean multiple.
Yeah.
That is a very expensive day. Yeah, you know, when I'm losing money in a funded account, that can be a very expensive day, but it's a different I don't know, it's a different kind of expense.
Yeah, it should be happening less frequently and less severe each time.
Exactly. And that's one of those things I can chart my progress on and go, you know, when I really want to, you know, when I'm like trying to get down on myself and be like, oh God, you screwed that up. You blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, you know what? I didn't do this. I didn't do that. You know, I can look at all these things that I used to do and go, you know what? I didn't do those things and note that improvement. I also kind of wanted to touch on, Andrew, you were talking about the balance of impulse versus intuition. And that one's been a lot of my focus probably the last 2 years is trying to really understand and identify those voices and the differences between those voices.
Yeah.
And for me, they kind of come from different parts of the body, and they come in different ways. Intuition is more of a whisper that I have to have an internal stillness to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. And impulse is the, oh my God, they're going to rocket this thing to the moon. I got to get in now. I got to get in now. And honestly, you know, I've got various setups that I really love based off, you know, like VWAP and IB and IB extensions, but my A+ setup, when I can pay attention to it, is when my body screams, you must, you know, when my impulse screams, oh my God, you must buy. If I can hit sell, that is the A+ trade, is to fade myself, fade my impulse.
Interesting. Yeah.
That is very fascinating. Like, I think you might be onto something there. The impulse is the loud one. The intuition is the quiet one.
Yeah.
I think
that's really the impulse is the body going,
Yeah. That's when it's screaming for you to do it.
Yeah.
That's that fight or flight, right? That's probably what that is.
It could be a lot of different things. But for me, it's a measure of the marketplace. So for me, that's my mind in tune with the other participants in the marketplace and realizing that that's probably them getting trapped. So I need to do the opposite.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's super interesting because I think really the only time I'll fade a direction is when I can feel that now I can feel other people's impulse, like you're saying. So, okay, like there it is. And I can sense that, and it's, sometimes I get run over, let's just be honest, but like every trade loses sometimes, but there's that, especially on NQ with how thin it is, there's that, like that price reach. Let's say it's like upward. It's just a little extra something that I know has got people hitting it, you know?
And, excited.
Oh,
yes,
it's like
yes.
My favorite, you know? It's like, oh, I want to be, let's say, short that, or I want to be kind of long that little reach of price that people are kind of really hoping for. And I sort of systematically built in kind of like a failure point. So this is what failure to succeed in this moment looks like. And you can kind of feel it, right? Like you watch the Dom long enough, like you watch the candles build, you can see, oh, like people are, there's a little froth here. And there are times when you get killed doing that, but it's worth a shot sometimes too, you know? And so, that's kind of a fun thing. Do you guys find that there's like a way for you in the morning before market opens to get more in touch with that whisper side, that more intuition side, or, and kind of away from the impulse side? Or are you kind of coming in and trying to sort it out as you're, you know, in the market?
I feel like for me, I'm always fighting the impulse.
Okay.
Like the better trades seem to come after I work through those morning impulses, you know, like the opening range. Like I've gotten to the point now where I'm starting to question whether I even want to trade the first 30 minutes of the market.
Yeah, I would skip it.
Because, it's very emotionally charged price action.
It is.
Like the,
yeah.
if there's no clear setup, then I know I'm very likely to try to force one. So it seems like the best when I do well is when I'm quieting those impulses, not acting on them, and then allowing the rational side to kind of come in there and work together with those impulsive decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went through a long exercise last spring where I wasn't allowed to trade the first 20 minutes. I had to watch it, but I couldn't trade it.
How'd that feel?
It was challenging. There was definitely days where I didn't do it, but it really did help me later on.
Yeah.
When I did start trading it, you know, it helped me be much more grounded in seeing where the levels are at and what does the market feel like today? And to get myself out of that habit of just throwing on a trade to throw on a trade to see what happens, you know, touch the stove to check if it's still hot. Yeah.
Like, oh, I gotta take a trade so I can get the feel of it. Like, No, you don't.
Yeah. No, you don't.
And I even had a moment too where at one point, I think it was sometime last week, or might have been the beginning of, I think it was sometime last week, where like I really like the idea of like approaching the markets as like a detective. Mm-hmm. Like I'm walking into a crime scene. Like you don't just start accusing people as soon as you get to the scene. Like first you got to take some notes, you got to look around, you got to talk to some people, you got to see what's happening, and then you can form conclusions to investigate. Right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really good. So I'll throw this out there. Most of my morning process is about quieting my brain down, my emotional whatever charged upness. I do tend to run a little hot as a human being. I tend to be pretty excited about things.
You got some intense eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I got some intensity in there. I think that's. It's going to be different for everybody, but for me, I'll overdo it real easy. I'll come in too hot. I'll overtrade. I'll do all that stuff. I'll oversize. And so I do have kind of a routine that works for me that I sort of had to work out over time that puts me in kind of a position of responding to whatever the market is. Not reacting. I don't really like that word, but just responding to whatever it's providing.
Can you like walk us through maybe like a quick example of like what that looks
totally.
Like?
Totally. Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of in this parts thing that we talked about in kind of the first episode where what I want to do is I want to, if I had, let's say, like a Buddhist monk part, right? I kind of get in touch with that a little bit. And I do it sort of, it's actually sort of a similar thing that I would do like before a big race. So like before a big bike race or something kind of intense. And it's the first thing that I'll do is I'll just in the morning, right? I get up, I usually do some exercise. I'm usually a buzz at that point. Like I'm thinking about a million things. Like my head's kind of, there's a lot of noise up there, kind of like probably for everybody. And I'll even, you know, I'll check kind of market levels and see what's going on a little bit. But then what I want to do is I want to just slow down my thinking. And so there's a little bit of a mechanical process where I won't look at social media stuff. I won't really look at the internet. Right now it's the middle of July. So I sort of think of the whole world as my living room, you know, it's fantastic.
Nice.
And so, So I'll sit outside. I'll just sit outside and kind of watch the sun come up, watch some clouds go by, watch some leaves on a tree. In the wintertime, it's a little different. I'll have a cup of coffee. I'll do a little bit of reading. I'll do something that's kind of intentionally boring, if that makes sense.
Are you trying to quiet the voice? Like you're just trying to be still? Yeah. It's almost like a meditation.
It's like a meditation. And it's, I can't really meditate that well yet. Maybe someday I'll be like a really good meditator. But right now, what I tend to do is I just try to not over, yeah, there you go. So like I try to not overstimulate myself. Slow down. I usually have my plan for what I'm going to trade, whether it be stocks or indexes. Like I have that set the night before. And so all my decisions have kind of already been made from what I want to trade product wise. I don't show up in the morning and like start scanning through the market and see what's going on and all this. Like I've set all that up. So in the morning I do very few things. I drink a coffee. I read a little bit. I might go for a little walk, but usually I don't even do that. I just kind of sit and I'm kind of still, right? After some, let's say some exercise in the garage or a little bike ride. So part of that process is really just like mechanically slowing my brain down. So I'll give you guys an example. This is kind of funny, but, back in kind of my like prime creative space. So I was working on these films and I was animating. So it was very like right brain. And what I would do is I wouldn't listen to any words in the morning. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'd go out in the morning. I was like in LA. It's super weird, but I'd go out and like swim or we'd surf. I can't surf, but I would kayak and that was fun. And so you got to get the rage out a little bit and then come back and I wouldn't talk to anybody. I would listen to instrumental music and I would really try to engage like the right side of my brain. I wouldn't really interact with anyone like verbally for the first few hours of the day while I built for myself what I kind of thought to be like a creative channel. And then I would start to do the work. And what happened? I did this for like 6 months and my creative work just skyrocketed. Like it was like I kind of tapped into it, like a secret right brain thing. And I was like, wow, that was awesome. So in trading, I do a similar thing. So really part of the reason that I write on my blog, on my website is just to get myself into that slower, deeper thinking. I'm not really looking for a payout. You know, I'm not really looking for a reaction. I'm just plodding through the information and I'm just thinking as deeply as I can. And so if I'm off, for instance, if I'm kind of, my brain is kind of noisy, I'll start reading more and I'll usually write an article or two and really try to deepen my thinking process and make things really boring for myself.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
So I'll tell you guys right now, like I've said this a few times, but like I don't have like a proper cell phone. I have like a weird lame phone that you like, it sucks to text on. Like, yeah, it's awful. It's a terrible phone. But I stay away from it. And so being not on a cell phone where I could like scroll or I could start triggering those like action, do, like do stuff, click things, move things around. It's that I usually don't eat until after the market close or after lunch. So my blood sugars are kind of low. I kind of want to be sort of tired in the market. Like I want to be kind of, I don't want to be that on edge. I don't want to be that gung ho. I want to be kind of,
you want the market to do something to make you move.
Yeah. Like I want to be sitting there in kind of a restful place. Yeah. And so I do a few things like that. Really it's that I mean, I could send you guys like a link to my pre-market routine, but mostly it's not so much the action. So I'll go into that in a little bit, but it's this headspace. It's this slowing down meditative headspace that says, I don't need to do anything today. I don't need to accomplish anything. I'm going to sit here and I'll tell you how I think about this. So then I have my checklist. This is some great stuff. It's not hard. It takes me 10 minutes. I do like a let's go, you know, one of these. I give it like a fist over the head. Come on, man. Like we're gonna get it today. But I don't want to amp myself up. I'm just like, you've got this. Like you're a champ. Okay. I tell myself some positive things like that, right? I restate for myself who I am in the market. I am extremely patient. I trade with purpose. I trade with intention. Right. I love trying and taking a stop, and I don't need to be here longer than I need to be here. right? I kind of walk myself through those things. Yeah. And so I really spend a lot of time, and I do this all day long. I do this 24/7. One of the pictures that I have is, I want to be the M&M of futures trading. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, I don't want to have a chip on my shoulder so much. I can't do that. I'm not like an angry guy, but he's like so tight. Okay. With like, lyrically, he's tight. All this stuff. He's just,
oh, the rapper.
The rapper, right? Not like M&M's. But like,
he does exist.
Yeah.
Green, blue, purple, brown.
All those things.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out which one. Green, probably.
Okay. Right? So he's like super, he's super skilled. He's super tight. He's focused on one thing only. And that's who I want to be in the market. So I spend a lot of time creating a visual of like what those qualities are. And I do that literally. I live that vision of who I want to be in the market, right? Like, it's
so. When you do that who I am in the markets moment, yeah, when you're reaffirming those things, are those things that you want to be, or are those things that you know you are?
They're both, right? So I know that I am them because I want to be them, and vice versa, mm-hmm, right? So I want to be them and I know that I am them. So I don't pair those to, this is going to sound weird, I don't pair those to what I've done previously. They're non-historical. It's just who I am right now. And it's who I will be from this moment forever. It doesn't matter if I was that yesterday or not. It matters that I am it today and I will be it tomorrow. And so that's a really, really important thing. So
you talked about with me, like, wanting to spend some time building like that vision of like who I want to be as a trader. And so hopefully that's going to be the homework you're about to give us.
Yeah. So that's okay. So that's really, really good. And there's a little bit of research on this, but it's kind of this idea that we can't act out something that we don't believe ourselves to be.
Yeah.
Okay. So I can't behave in a way that is out of line with who I know I am. Okay. So like, if I know that I'm a failure and I do well for a while, but I'm ultimately going to fail and then find something else, guess what? All my behaviors are going to align to that belief and I'm going to end up doing it, right?
Yep.
If I believe that I'm a guy who shows up every day and blows up, you know, evals, then I'm going to show up and blow more evals. That's what's going to happen. And so the thing that's so interesting about this is we need who we know ourselves to be based in reality, okay? We can't like fabricate a fantasy. Like, it has to be based in reality. So what we do is we do this in small steps. Okay, so what if today I show up and I'm a guy who, let's say I don't know that I'm a guy who makes money yet, let's just pretend, but I'm a guy who takes his stops. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's an inch I can take today. So then I'm just going to change that one small piece. So I realize that, you know, in this, you're going to be honest, yesterday I wasn't that guy, but today I am. Okay, take your stops. Now you do that every single day and that becomes part of your identity. I am a guy who takes his stops. Great. I'm a guy who, right, whatever the next little step is. So, and I'll share a little personal thing. When I got out of college, I'm older now, right? I've been out of college for a while. I was a real heavy guy. All right. I was, back in 2006, right? So I was, like about 265 pounds, right? And just under 6 feet, or about 6 feet tall. And so I was like, well, I've always been this guy, but I don't want to be this guy anymore. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to eat vegetables. And then I was like, I'm going to be a guy who doesn't eat any sugar. And then I'm going to be a guy who like goes on hikes in the mountains. And then I did that. And at the end of the summer, I'd lost 70 pounds. Okay, cool. Well, now what do I do? You know, are you Mr. Yo-Yo guy, or are you like going to actually be that person continuing forward? Well, you've created a small habit and you just start to see yourself as a person who doesn't eat much sugar and goes for hikes in the mountains. And today, I mean, I've kept that consistent for whatever, almost 20 years, you know, and it's not because of some like rigorous diet. Like, my diet's not different. It's just that I don't see myself as that person, right? I see myself as a person who follows through on his exercise plans and follows through on a reasonable diet, and off I go. And so in markets, I do the same thing. I want to create this really intense vision for who I want to be. Okay. And I have to be honest about how I fall short of that. That's okay. Like, that's going to be the facts. There's going to be a distance there. But each day I want to really flood my mind with who I want to be today. What's that picture? And for you, Kyle, like, a lot of times what we do is we bring all this baggage, right? So you go, well, I want to be this kind of person,
but yeah,
I was doing this. Oh, but I was doing this. Oh, we beat ourselves up. Oh, I'm such a loser. I was doing, get that out of here.
That's,
you know?
That was yesterday. But what right. I love about what you're saying here is it's all about incremental steps.
Yeah.
And it's okay to fail because you got tomorrow to try again.
That's right. Okay. So like one of the topics that comes up often for people that have been, let's say, in markets for a long time, but not succeeding in the way they want, it's usually one of two things. They either perpetually see themselves as a loser and they're continuing to lose, or mm-hmm. they're kind of winning, but they see themselves as basically having experienced a lot of pain and they're afraid of markets, right? And so they're stuck at break even, right? And there are people who've been stuck at break even for 2 or 3 years, you know, like that, as wild as it sounds, it's true. So what do you do with that? Well, you have to see yourself, let's say the break even guy, you have to start to see yourself as fearless, right? You have to start to see yourself as someone who doesn't mind losing occasionally. You have to see yourself.
Today, I'm going to take my stops, but I'm going to put the trades on and they're going to do what they're going to do. And I'm not going
to
be afraid.
That's right. Okay. So then you start to, what your brain starts to do is it starts to just reward yourself for being who you are. So you put a trade on and you lose and it goes, yeah, but I'm not a chicken.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now let's reward that. Let's go, yeah, I'm not a chicken. Yeah, I lost money today, but that wasn't the point. I'm not a chicken. Okay. Great. I have money. Like I've set aside a budget. I can lose money. Fine. Now start to reward yourself with, I am being who I want to be.
And did that.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the great thing. So now let's say you've been blowing up accounts, right? Small accounts, funded accounts, eval accounts, whatever. And you haven't reached the profitability that you want to reach. Well, what you want to do is you want to show up and you want to put on your trades and then you want to tell yourself, I'm a person who protects my capital. Okay. What behaviors do I have to do to protect my capital? You walk away after 3 red trades. Then you pat yourself on the back. It's not about P&L. Screw P&L. Who cares about that? It's about being the person that you want to be. You go, man, I did what I said I was going to do. I walked away. Fantastic. And what's amazing to me is that these paths from where we are to where we want to be are only so long. It's not an infinite path that's 1,000 miles long. You don't have to walk this out forever. In fact, for a lot of people, it's 2 months, 3 months of just doing a couple small things the way that we said we would do them, and they're at the result that they want, and they're floored by it. And it's like, how is it this easy? And I'm not saying that it's easy. It's just that once we have that clear vision for where we want to go, we can actually start to get there. Do you know what I mean? And you have to flood your mind with this visual of who you want to be, right? Whether that's a market goal, a fitness goal, like a career goal, whether that's like a, I don't know, a parenting goal. Like, I don't care what the goal is. You have to see yourself in the specific ways of executing that thing before you can start to walk it out. And your brain, everything will start to align to that. And you'll start to see behavior change. And you'll be like, wow, I'm actually becoming this person. And that only reinforces it, right?
That reaffirm step, I think, is huge, too. That was something that I remember George talking about in the first conversations like we ever had with a guest.
Yeah.
But he talked about, like, you know, if he stops when he hits his max drawdown or whatever his plan allotment is, he'd go out and buy himself a sweatshirt or a hoodie or something that he likes.
Oh, okay.
And it was because in his mind, he was saving more money by stopping. So that gave him the freedom to go reward himself by following those behaviors.
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
Okay. So I'll tell you guys, like, currently I'm maybe in a year you'll interview me and this will have all blown up in my face, but I'm currently operating without a locked, rigid daily drawdown. Okay. I have a DLL for the day, but it's not broker side, right? It's self-enforced. So it's the opposite of what most people do, right? Where we have either a broker side lockdown or we have one that we can alter. And the reason I took this off about 6 months ago and I've been running with it that way, it's there, but I'm responsible for it. And that simple change of not having it on broker side and not having it mechanically done, but being my responsibility, forced me to see myself as someone who takes their daily loss limit, which is a weird, simple mechanism. But now, instead of being frustrated, and the way that I trade up to my daily loss limit has actually changed in some weird, interesting ways. But I now have created an image of myself as someone who takes their own daily loss limit, like by their own will, like their own desire. And it gives me a ton of peace. So I know I can show up again, interview me in a year and maybe I'll have like lost everything and cracked. But right now, you know, I'm not saying people have to do this. I'm kind of saying this is sort of like, this is kind of climbing without a rope in some ways. And it's that I want to be responsible for each step. I want to be responsible for getting my head in that place of like complete confidence that I am a secure place to invest. So especially with leverage, I am essentially a risk-free investment for myself, mm-hmm. right? It's some way, you know, I think we have to accept that markets can do weird things and like shit can happen, but I trust myself fully. And what happened after doing this for maybe 2 or 3 months was like, wow, I remember just sitting back and being like, I fully trust myself with all my capital, as much capital as I could give myself. I know that I could hold my daily loss limit. I could trade whatever, you know, size the account allows me to do. It was super bizarre. I didn't expect that. But what I had found was I would take my daily loss limit before, but I would fight up to it, right? Every stop out that took me closer to it was like, I was like, oh, yeah. Gosh, no, like, hang on. And so I would really want my first trade to be a winner, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And you know, or if it wasn't, then I'd get nervous. Basically, I had this really polarizing thing where if the first trade was a loser, I had like an 80% likelihood of hitting my daily loss limit for the day. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if my first trade was a winner, I would feel good. And a lot of times I would quit or whatever, you know, so I was doing a lot of like small up day, daily loss limit, small up day, daily loss limit. And when I took that off and said, you're responsible, man, like just do your thing. I started to have more outsized up days and I've held the daily loss limit. Like I've been 100% consistent with that.
I don't think it has to be an all or nothing either. I mean, I think you can probably work your way into that. Like,
for sure.
You know, put your broker cutoff point, like double what your personal max drawdown is going to be. And then you just rely on yourself to stop for.
Yeah. A weird one. What I did for it was I actually cinched up my broker loss side limit. I had it less. And so I just got used to hitting it. I just would like, crap, I hit it again. Oh, I hit it again. Oh, I hit it again. And then some days I would, you know, I was still profitable overall, but I got the bad taste of being locked out for the day just out of the system. It just became something that happened to me once or twice a week, you know?
That's fascinating.
And looking at my history has been great for reinforcing that. You know, that's when I can look back at that sawtooth pattern in my history and go, you know, like right now my daily loss limit is 450. And I'm like, oh, look, I hit 450. I hit 450. I hit 450. And then I had plus 2000. Okay. Yeah. And knowing that I can hit that loss limit and I still have room has helped.
One or two of those isn't going to be enough to ruin a week's worth. One good day.
Yeah. Like I think we're all scared of getting hit in the face until you realize that like injuries heal.
Yeah.
And accounts heal. Like they heal. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even today, you know, I'm still running with that 450 loss limit. And, you know, my trading was mixed. I started pulling up and then I started chasing and I looked up and I was like, oh, I'm at negative 390. Well, you know what? This is NQ. My chance of pulling off a trade without hitting 450 are slim to none.
Yeah.
And I walked away, which I haven't been able to do this last week. So that was very good. And, you know, now I'm looking at it, go, okay, I need to reinforce that behavior.
How do you build on that now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even that, right? So then I think sometimes we view that as like, oh, but I lost, you know, not at all. I think that's exactly
you
right.
Saved.
I won
$60 or whatever it was.
Yeah. It. Once we normalize the daily loss limit for all of us, and I think as like a community, just normalizing the daily loss limit, like a lot of times just having a daily loss limit that you're willing to hit is the difference between a hugely successful trader and someone who doesn't make it, you know, like just that.
And it's funny, we talked about this in the roundtable where I actually came up with that daily loss limit was I looked at my historical performance across the eval accounts before I was trading funded. And I went back and I said, you know what? I have never ended green on a day where I went under negative 400. It, once I passed negative 400, I was guaranteed to hit the maximum loss limit on the account. And, you know, so I just, okay, historically, I know that there's something there in my brain or whatever that tells me if I go past 400, I'm not seeing the market today.
That's great. You know, I've got a guy, and I think this has been consistent for most people, is he tightened up his loss limit. Like, he made it a smaller R multiple and has had a much greater string of success because of it, right? And so what our tendency is to not have a daily loss limit and then to have a loose daily loss limit, right? And then what happens? So it doesn't matter. Like, your brain doesn't care, you know, if it's, let's say, if it's 5R or it's 10R. Once you're at 5R, you're done. Like, it's going to 10. Yeah. Like, that's what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, that's like, exactly. Yeah. And for me, it's 3R.
Okay, yeah. And so that's what I say is I like a 2 or a 3, and I like to be able to basically, what's my pain point, right? And I want it just north of my pain point. All right. So that way I hit it and I'm not distracted by the trading day. It just is, it's just a fact. It is what it is. Like,
you hit it before you're fully tilted.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'm still cool. I'm still calm. I have no regrets. I go like, all right, fine. And you know, and then you start to learn to operate inside of that. And it's such a simple thing. And I think it makes such a massive difference for people. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy.
I agree. Definitely.
I got one last question then, for the assignment, then the figuring out the who we want to be. Do you think it's a worthwhile exercise then taking stock of our faults, in order to have like the blueprint of like what I want to work on, or what's, like, okay, I act emotionally when the markets start moving or getting volatile, and my ideal trader doesn't do that. But now I've got something that I can actually like point to and be like, no, today I'm not doing this.
Okay, that's a great question. So this is an area that I think nuance is super important. So I'm going to try to communicate it. I've said this a few times, but I'm extremely honest with myself to the most negative possible way. But I do that, what I've realized now, I've said that a few times, and I've realized that I do that in a way that's still extremely positive and encouraging, that is probably not for most people. So like, I never beat myself up. I like never beat myself up about anything. So I never like take an exit and go, oh, I should have held more, or like, you know, oh, it came back to break even. I'm so dumb. Like, I don't have that brain mechanism. I don't have, and I'm just saying, like, we should all work to not beat ourselves up. But, you know what I mean? Like, that's, so I find that when I tell people, I'm extremely.
But how do you give yourself that feedback without beating yourself up?
Yes.
I know that's what you're leading to. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm still trying to understand it, to be honest. And what I find is that I'm just trying to, there's a thing inside of me that I'm trying to give to other people, because there's no reason to register, let's say, a mistake or an imperfect trade or whatever as like a fault or a flaw.
Right.
Okay. However, there were times where I would let losers run like crazy, right? We've all done that. It's been there. What I did that was different, I saved screenshots. Like, I have a history of those. I have them in a Discord channel that I share just with myself. and I still sometimes go back to those, and it's like this. It's like I visit my hometown, right? And I remember how awful high school was. And,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Or whatever. And then I go back into my normal life, and I'm extremely grateful for what I have, for who I am. I want to kind of go back, and I just want to set up camp in that stupidity just for a second, just to remember how bad it was. It's a motivator. It's a negative motivator. Then I march forward back to where I actually live, my hometown today, like where I, you know, who I am, what I want to be, all this stuff. And sometimes I do that just mentally in my head. So, you know, let's say sometimes I'm feeling lazy about my workouts, and I just go back and I'm like, man, what was it like being 265 pounds? That sucked. Like, all the cool things I could do now. And I really remember like how bad it feels to get made fun of in that, right? Or how bad it feels to not be able to do all the things you want to be able to do. And I want to live that vividly, but I don't condemn myself for having been that person, right? So I don't beat myself up for that person. I go, that sucked. Back to the workout, you know, like, let's get after it. And so I look at my blowups, right? Which I've had all that same stuff that everybody else has had. And I look at those and I remember all the pain. Okay. There was a Jackson Hole day All right. That I just got worked. This was like 2022 and it is forever burned in my head, which sucks because I like Jackson Hole. Like, I think it's a great place. I have fond memories there, but I have to remember all the ads as that thing went down and how that turned out. And I use that. I don't beat myself up for it. Right. So I'm all positive. Like, it's all love for myself as I learned, but I go, man, that day sucked. Okay. I am never doing that again. Right. And so I do apply that as motivation to who I want to be. It doesn't mean that I'm susceptible of doing that again. This is what's weird is people sometimes look at their mistakes and they think it makes them more likely to repeat it. It makes me way less likely to repeat that. Right. Like, okay, I pour that over myself. And then I go, man, who am I today? I am a guy who, like, I manually keep my own daily loss limit. I size based on the way that I said I was going to size. I execute based on the way that I said I was going to execute. So now I have this huge tower that stands above those mistakes. And I'm like, I'm never leaving this space. I would never threaten like this king of the hill location that I have by going back to doing stupid stuff like I was doing before. Does that make sense? Yeah. And it's like, I've taken this ground and I'm never giving it back ever. Like, you cannot have it. So
I feel like a lot of what you're trying to say is acceptance. Like, when you look and you're critiquing or when you're trying to analyze behaviors that maybe you don't necessarily want to continue doing, you're not criticizing the behavior. You're accepting that. You're finding out what stems from it. Yeah. And then you're moving to try to make change.
And I'm accepting that I'm still, like, in those things, I'm still learning to walk. And I don't get to decide where I'm at in the process. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to decide my skill level. I might want to have super skill, but I don't get to choose that.
The acceptance step, though, is so freeing.
It's extremely freeing.
It's like suddenly all of the negativity goes away once you say, like, yeah, okay, this is me and this is where I'm at.
Still learning, guys.
This is not where I'm going to be tomorrow.
That's right. And now that I've seen it, each time I see a new thing should be exciting. That, mm-hmm. Okay, so people make this mistake. They get up in front of a big crowd. Okay. And they're receiving an award and they say, what a humbling experience. Okay. That's such BS. It's not a humbling experience to receive an award and have people applaud for you. Like, that's what they're saying. Yeah. What they're saying is, I didn't realize I was this great.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Right. Yeah. It's totally crap. Yeah. So the distance that they're feeling.
Did I do that?
Yeah. No.
Damn it. I did that.
So, like, well, we all do it. That's our natural, but what we're experiencing.
It's called being human. Right now.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't necessarily thinking of it. I can't remember your
post, I know.
But this is what we're realizing is like, oh, like the world around me is telling me that I'm better than I thought I was. So we're feeling the distance between how we're our new self. Oh, I'm really great, I guess.
Yeah.
And our old self, I was really humble a minute ago. That's what we're feeling when they say this is a humbling experience. But it's not humbling. Okay. It's actually elevating, right? And which is not good. That's stupid. it's fine. Whatever. Who cares? But like the idea is that actually coming in and going, I didn't know that. I didn't know that about myself. I didn't know that about my skill. And I accept that I have things to learn. That's a humbling experience, right? Like genuinely a humbling experience. Like I ate shit today. That was a humbling experience. Okay, great. And what we tend to do then is our egos get upset. I ate shit. Like I want to be better than this. I am better than this. But no, forget all that. You're not. You're not better than this. It's okay though. Like you said, Kyle, let's accept that it's okay. Like I do not need to know everything, right? I do not need to be everywhere all the time. I can be limited. I can do well from a limited space. I can do well from a place of openness and acceptance. And, you know, it's like I have children, right? And at no point did they mispronounce something and I slap them, right? Like they didn't take a first step and I shoved them over, you know? You know, like that's
try
insane.
Harder. Yeah. Try harder.
Right. Yeah. Like,
you call that walking?
Yeah. What is this?
No. What are you, drunk?
Yeah. Like, they fall over. You help them up. You applaud that. You applaud that they took a step and failed, right? Applaud that they took a step and failed. And we need to do that with ourselves. Like, I took a step and I failed. Cool. Great. Let's see if I can take two next time, you know? And
nurturing.
There's a couple of milestones on my path the last few months that really helped me towards that.
Yeah.
One of them was no posting no boast. We're going to call it no boasting on social media. No, I hit blah, blah, blah. I did this awesome thing. The closest I've come is coming in and going, hey, I got more funded accounts. I took payout. Because those don't feel like they're really feeding the ego. So I stopped using social media as an attempt to feed my ego because social media doesn't pay my bills.
No, it doesn't.
Not yet, at least.
One of the other pieces we talked about is the resets. And this is when I kicked in, and I think probably February and really started helping me turn around, is I came in and I said, I will no longer pay for a reset. Hmm. I will not do it. If I bonk an account, I'm waiting until the rebill where I get that free reset, or I'm going on and I'm earning a free reset. You know, I trade through Topstep. So, you know, Topstep every few weeks, they give away a free reset and they have a quiz every day that you can play and get a chance at getting a free reset. And so those have become my sores. And actually what I've found, you know, like this week I'm sitting on a free reset that I earned last week. And I have no account to apply it to. Darn.
That's cool.
That sucks.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah.
Now that was boasting. So now I'm screwed.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, I noticed, you know, Bear, that you kind of made a specific change where you said, I've noticed that I'm sort of feeding my ego with these posts, which I don't think they came across that way at all. I don't think anybody would be like,
no,
what an egotistical, but you know, but I think what you're saying is, it doesn't matter. You're saying, hey, for me, I'm feeling a little trigger here.
My ego food is different than most people's ego food. Okay. Yes.
And that transition is massive, right? Because we don't share our P&L with anybody. As like, I don't have to give any part of my P&L to anyone else. Right. And it's mine and mine alone. And if it doesn't exist, then I also don't get anyone else's. Right. So
it's true.
So, you know, it's just on me. And this is a massive piece. So then when we share on that, you know, on the Twitter or whatever, and there's an ego thing, and then it affects the way that I trade next, what the heck payoff is that? Like, this sucks, you know? And it's, our minds are, I totally understand this. I've done this more and more. I understand why people just, who are successful, just hide, you know, just like aren't attached to anything, because the more exposure you have to, let's say the internet, to social media, to a position, the higher exposure you have to potentially loss, right? Or like, let's say loss of ego, or, you know,
invalidation.
Yeah. All this stuff. It's like, it's sort of like, kind of do it, like be successful in the shadows so that you can protect that success. Right. And that Ooh. Success is precious. It's precious to me. And that's why, so, you know, I don't share any of that stuff just because what's the point? I don't see how, like, unless I'm willing to give a percentage of my account to somebody, which I'm not, like, I don't know how sharing anything about my account is valuable to anyone. Yeah.
Right.
I'm happy to share.
Look at me. I'm a great trader. Look at me.
Nobody cares about any of that anyway. Like, and it doesn't benefit. No. If they do care about it, then they're wrong and they shouldn't, you know?
Yeah. Why do they care about that?
Right.
No, I care about when somebody says, you know, I really turned my trading around by working with this person, by reading this book, by, you know, using this EKG device on my head and learning how to meditate.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I look at and go, oh, cool. I might be able to use some of that.
That's right. That has impact to my daily life, my trading and my thinking and all that stuff. Yeah. I think that's where the real value is. Right. And a lot of times, you know, there's people share analysis. That's fantastic. You know, that's helpful to just hear all that. And, you know, but I think the P&L stuff, the account specific things can just, they threaten my ego.
I want things that make me think.
Yeah, exactly. Provoking.
Like, here's a new idea that maybe you haven't considered. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I want to be exposed to.
Yeah. You know, I asked the kind of the, do you find that looking at your overall P&L curve is helpful or harmful, basically, you know, earlier, and you guys kind of said it's helpful. I find that my daily P&L is pretty much meaningless, but if I pay attention to that macro curve, then it's macro. Insane. Yeah. So it's so good because it reminds me that for the last 30 days, I have had consistent behavior. For the last 60 days, my behavior has been consistent. And what we find, so with this vision piece, Kyle, like you were kind of asking, is that the more we attach ourselves emotionally to things, right? The more we respond to them. And that's where we see that negatively, like, oh no, I'm red for the day and I'm attached to that P&L. So then we see the spiral, but we can reverse that by saying I'm attached to my consistent process, which creates a bottom left to upper right P&L curve. And I'm not protecting that curve. So, I mean, I am, but we can get attached to that and you can put it to zero too. Like this can go both ways. But what that reminds me of is that I have been behaving consistently for X period of time, and there's no way that I would threaten that. And so, you know, back to Kyle, what you're talking about and kind of asking about is how do I create this vision of who I want to be, right? So we take parts work that we did. We find out kind of who's already in the team, who's already there. What's the best output for them? What's the way that they can express themselves best and benefit the team best? And then we want to saturate our minds with good things. So we visit the negative things. I go visit my blow-ups every once in a while, but that's only there to reinforce this greater body of work, which is this really clear, powerful, emotionally powerful picture of myself, right? That I want it to be, it's not really goals like someday I'm going to have a Lambo. It's not that. It's who do I want to be? Like, how rational do I want to be? What things can I do to be more rational today? What things can I do to be more decisive and more shrewd, right? And to care less about validation from other people and more about validation from achieving my intentions. Like, how can I, you know, those types of things. And I spend basically all day, this sounds really narcissistic, but when I'm not thinking about my children, I'm basically just thinking about who I want to be, right? And how I can get there. So that's in my free time. Then I'm like getting in the groceries for my wife, but then I'm like right back to it, right? After those groceries are in, I'm like, who, you know, maybe yeah, I want to be the guy who can bring in all the Costco groceries in one trip, whatever. So, yeah. You know, but it really is like, I think people would be surprised how much high performers are thinking about their performance and who they want to be. So like Tiger Woods is like, he's Tiger Woods and he thinks himself as Tiger Woods and he's constantly thinking himself as Tiger Woods. You look at like Tom Hogarth and the way that he talks about who he is as a trader. I mean, he says that he has to move into that place of being who he wants to be in markets. Like he spends substantial time in the morning. Like he's not normally that person, but he has this extremely crisp and clear vision of the type of, I'll say, artist he wants to be in the markets. If you look at Alex Honnold from a climbing perspective, he's the same way. He has this extremely clear vision of who he wants to be on, you know, these rock walls. If you look at, you know, Michael Jordan had this clear picture of who he wanted to be. And I think we do those in smaller ways as independent traders. I want to be this type of person. And it doesn't matter if anybody sees it, right? It doesn't matter if anybody knows about it. I am fully satisfied being this person at my desk today and just closing down my charts at the end of the day and being like, I kicked ass.
Yeah, I want to be that person for me.
I was me 100% and I am thrilled about it. Yeah.
It's a performance activity. I mean, look at your F1 drivers. What are they doing all their spare time? They're sitting there with their eyes closed and they're visualizing that next track and they're visualizing every corner, every apex, every turn, every, you know, marker that they need to look for.
That's right. And that's why I tell people to have a simple trading system, because then you can walk away from the market and you can see it. You can picture it. What's happening.
You can just watch yourself taking that VWAP touch. Take that VWAP touch.
That's right.
Touch.
Yeah, exactly. Like 1 minute candle down, impulse back higher, take the half, you know, like that. Yep. I do that stuff constantly where it's like, okay, you know, and I can walk around, you know, I can just walk around with it. I can come back to my setups anytime I want. Like they're in my head and you do get better at it. Like those F1 guys, like they can see the turns of all the tracks they've raced because they've been practicing that visualization. And the more you do this in your own system, the more consistent your system is, the more consistent your process is, the more you can basically take that in your pocket. I don't need a computer. I don't need a cell phone. I don't even need a piece of paper with a printout. I just get my head right in the space and I can see the candles. Like I can you know, make the whole thing up. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think your window's starting to expire here. So we should probably wrap things up.
I'll double check, but yeah, I had more opening on the back end, but yeah.
Sorry. No, I think we've hit a good stopping point here.
I agree.
Andrew's given us plenty to reflect on. So I know what I'm going to be doing is spending a lot of time trying to build that vision of who I want to be as a trader. And I'm going to also spend some time looking at my faults, like honestly assessing them, not in a negative way, but in a way that's just to identify and accept them. So that way I can have something to help me build that vision of who I want to be.
To bring value. I mean, your faults are part of you. You have to treasure them. Mandy always says, you know, love your losses. You can't be a good trader if you can't love your losses.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you to both you guys for joining in today, offering your insights. This turned out way better than I thought. I don't think we spent nearly as much time on greed, but I like the direction that this took. And
I agree. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Probably going to have to start up that new series here real soon. if you did enjoy today's conversation, you still want to hear more, then you really need to check out the Trade Runner series that we did with Rich Friesen. You can check out anything that we did at the Humanity of Trading back catalog. I'll put links to the series page on here. Make sure you follow Andrew over at longwintertradingco.com, where he posts all those blogs, and there's just a ton of insightful, thought-provoking content on there. Not saying it's all right or wrong, but it'll definitely make you think, and I think that's the idea, right?
Yep.
As always, you can follow all of us on Twitter. We'll put all those links in the episode description. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, but until then, tell your friends about us so I can feed my greed and have a wonderful day.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.